Siebert and ladies and gentlemen. Well, I regret that I can't bring you the latest news from Washington today, but I can bring you the latest National Press Club bar story about Washington today. Told to me by a colleague whom I met on the plane this morning, this afternoon. He said two pigeons were flying through the air, one behind the other, and the second one moved out in front of the first pigeon. Then he'd fall back, and he did that two or three times. The first pigeon said, "Well, look, if you're so fast, why don't you just stay out in the lead?" Second pigeon said, "Oh, no, I couldn't do that. You're carrying the president's letter. I'm carrying the apology." Well, I haven't very often talked to college groups, and I always do with a little sense of trepidation. I'm always, I think with some encouragement of a GI I once heard describe to me his first day in the Army. He said, we were at Fort Dix, and they got us out of bed about 5:30 in the morning, and they took us all out in a very big parade ground that was bare and cold and terrible, and a big, rough-looking sergeant lined us up. And he said, now, I want all you guys with a college education to stand over here. So he said, some of us moved over there. He said, I want all you guys with a high school education to stand over here. Some other fellows moved over there. And then a few just stayed where they were. And the sergeant said, now we're going to spend the day policing this yard, see? He said, now you guys with a high school education, you're going to pick up all the pieces of gum and the cigarette butts and the things what don't move. He said, you guys with the high school education, you're going out there and spend the day, and you're going to pick up all the leaves and the little bits of papers and all the things what do move. Then he turned to the third group, and he said, and you guys what ain't got no education, you're just going to sit there, see, and maybe you're going to learn something. Well, you guys with the college education are just going to sit there. I don't know if you're going to learn a great deal tonight. But partly because I'm going to violate all the principles of professional lectureship, which demand that one grapple with and solve the future in 45 or 50 minutes, and that one be very positive and very omniscient and never look back on affairs. I'm going to do what General MacArthur doesn't do and recall what I was saying before the great blow fell, canceling out so many prior convictions and conceptions of this government and its policy. Two or three weeks ago, I put down on paper here the remarks that I'd intended to say here tonight. I read them over just the other night in the light of the international upheaval caused by this Chinese attack in Korea. And I thought, of course, I'll simply have to throw this away and write a totally new speech. But then I thought, no, I wouldn't do that. That I would say what I had written in the first place, because it seemed to me that there might be a real value in doing that. Because some of the things I will say tonight, I think will sound a little archaic to you now, and probably though they were out of another era, and a few things just dead wrong. But it did seem to me that by doing that, and then going on as much as I can into what has now happened, we might provide a contrast, more sharply illustrating where we are now in comparison where we thought we were up to 2 weeks ago and where we are going. And this, by doing this, it might also serve to remind us all of some of the basic political and military principles, which I think are still valid despite the new course of events. Principles that we tend to lose sight of in our own present excitement. So then let me give you these thoughts of 3 weeks ago. Not only has the American community entered into a new epoch in terms of its positions and responsibilities in the world, but we as individual Americans have also entered a new epoch in terms of our personal lives and how they're going to be lived. Great events have always affected the smallest of men, but never before so directly, so unmistakably, and overwhelmingly. Since, I suppose, the Industrial Revolution began to revolve, history has been moving in a geometric proportion. Once, whole centuries or more were contained within a single era, and now it seems that a single lifetime encompasses a distinct era within itself. I believe that this country and we as Americans will survive this epoch in which we live and emerge in organized and orderly form. But exactly what that form and that order will look like, I don't know. I don't believe anybody can know. Whether it will resemble our present partly individual, partly collective, but basically and generally free society, I think will depend on how all and each of us as individual Americans think and behave now and over the immediately approaching years. There's been a profound change of astonishing abruptness in our collective life. For the first time, Americans see their past more clearly than their future. For the first time, Americans have lost absolute confidence in their future. And profound change, too, in our physical existence. For the first time, this country really stands in the shadow of physical danger. For the first time, the primary question of war or peace rests upon America, not only the secondary question of victory or defeat, which has rested upon us before and with which we have been familiar. Now, this is the same as saying that contemporary Western civilization itself depends upon America. And because of the ratio of history's modern movement, we don't have even this century in which to win or lose. We have but this generation, and that means you and I. We are it. Now, this is a remarkable prospect. It's crushing or uplifting in each of our minds or hearts, depending upon the varying natures of our individual inner structures, which were determined by a power having little to do with history and more inscrutable than time. I think that modern psychology is not going to help us very much. I do not know that there is time to alter the methods and the substance in our educational institutions. I think we're going to have to go ahead pretty much with the equipment we already have. And limited as it may be, it is still a fuller and sounder equipment than that of any other people I know. It includes a set of social principles of action oriented from our original political doctrines, which in turn are rooted in primary religious faith. I've traveled a lot in the world, and I'm aware of a great goodness in American life. And in that, I think there is great strength. But how is it that we came into this bewildering new era for our country? How has this extraordinary prospect come about? This thing that has happened in a span of time hardly longer than that of our own childhood and youth. There are big geopolitical reasons, if that's the right term. They are contiguous reasons and interconnected, but perhaps the first of them is the decline of Europe as the power center of the world. Now, there are many elements involved in this decline. One of them is economic, in which two forces have been at work. The rising and eventually overwhelming competition of the United States as a producing and exporting area, and the gradual loss through roughly the same period of Europe's colonial holdings around the world, with consequences political and military as well as economic. Another big element is the rise of air power as a military force, which almost nullified the natural military barriers and defense lines of Europe and all but eliminated the factor of space in the one strategic area of the world which had the least space to expand. Still another element, perhaps consequent upon those others, is the psychological transformation of Europeans shown in the decay of the hopes of many Europeans as individuals. Their gradual loss of a sense of identity with the source and center of Occidental power and culture. The atrophy of the idea of being a European in its former greatness of meaning. And consequently, we have seen a terrible social apathy in the Europe of recent years, partly due, of course, to the lingering effects of the war itself. And from that has come a kind of political anarchy in France, for example, coming with a loss of a sense of mission in the world, resulting in a frustration, in a common distrust of man for man, and altogether making stable governance frequently quite impossible. And so Western Europe, unable even to federate its jealous nationalism, has greatly declined as a power center. Along with this power decline have come three tremendous surging changes in three other areas of the globe. The transformation of the United States, always a great industrial power, into a continuing military power, now committed to the exercise of military power in time of peace as well as in time of war. The consolidation of the Russian Revolution and its passing into the stage, inevitable with any dictatorship in a major nation with no heritage of political freedom, a stage where its chief end is no longer social reform, but simply the perpetuation of the dictatorship's power. And third, of course, the epical upheaval of Asia, a century or more in the making, now loosed from most Western controls and churning in a vast revolution, with social reform its compelling force and nationalism its battle cry and banner. Obviously, these four developments, happening as fast as they are and tremendous in scope as they are, mean that we live in a world that is no longer either safe or steady, a world in which anything can happen. We are witnessing a most violent play of forces, the outcome of which, whatever it is, will bear upon it a stamp of remarkable finality. Should the conflicts be resolved by military cataclysm, all will lose in one degree or another, but surely the greatest losers will remain lost for as long as men can see ahead. And it is, of course, the problem of our people and our government, and surely no government since Lincoln's has borne such incredible responsibilities or run such frightening risks. The problem is to deal with these three great developments we see beyond our borders in such a manner as to prevent war in the first instance, and if war should come, despite those efforts, to prevent defeat. And along with this is the corollary internal problem, domestic problem, of preparing and organizing our own people so that these exterior policies will have some chance of working. And these four tasks I'll go into, if I may, in a little more detail. Russia, or rather the government of Russia, is the enemy. And yet it happens that we are not in direct physical and material conflict with Russia. We have no common borders with the enemy. Armed troops and Russian troops, beyond token occupation forces, do not face each other. Save for the Bering Strait, we do not face on a common ocean. And we have no serious direct conflict of trade and economic competition. The two powers, Russia and this country, have been maneuvering, defending from the other, attempting to weaken the other, by working upon those two other great areas of the world, weakened Western Europe and the revolutionary Orient. The two conflict directly only in the realm of the human mind, where Russia has the exclusive advantage, or greatly overrated one, of a subversive force within our own boundaries. Each great power is trying to drive the influence of the other out of Western Europe and out of Eastern Asia. We do not wish war anywhere among any peoples. Russia will use war or not, depending upon her need at the moment, to eliminate our influences, as witness Korea. Russia wishes only to avoid war with us, at least until such a time when she can be sure she will not be beaten. And we intend, of course, that that time shall never come. For some time yet, the greatest danger of war between the two great powers lies in miscalculation by one or the other in their maneuvers with and within those secondary power regions of Europe and Asia. Without much doubt, the ultimate aim of the Russian Marxists is a whole world remade in their own image. And for that, they are probably prepared to wait a good many years.